from 6 on 2FM.
Yes, well, a big thank you to Conor Bean for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, June 28. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Tony O'Donoghue and Lisa Fallon reflect on Vera Powell's Ireland squad selection for the upcoming Women's World Cup. In Gaelic Games, Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray will review and preview the weekend's action in both the Ladies Football Championship and Camogie Championship. We'll also round up today's action for Team Ireland at the European Games with some notable news in boxing as fighters book their place in next year's Olympics. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. It is great to have your company here on 2FM. Plenty to get through this evening. Before we cross to Tony O'Donoghue and Lisa Fallon, just a word on the Irish boxers at the European Games. Reigning Olympic champion Kelly Harrington has won her quarterfinal bout to crucially secure Olympic qualification for Paris. There was also success for Sligo boxer Dean Clancy, who will compete at the Olympics for the first time after he defeated his Italian opponent. And in the last few seconds, Michaela Walsh has also secured qualification. So very well done to those boxers. Jack Marley was also successful against his Croatian opponent, meaning he's the first Irish heavyweight or super heavyweight to win a major medal since Garrow Joe Coleman, who won European gold back in 1947. So we'll have plenty more on that with Horsey Sports' Siobhan Madigan, and we'll hear from Kelly Harrington in due course. However, let us cross to Tony O'Donoghue and Lisa Fallon first, because the Irish Women's World Cup squad was announced today. Tony O'Donoghue, if I come to you first, I want to start this in positive, and a very well done to the 23 players who have made the squad. What an achievement, what a moment for those, because a lot of the chat here is about those who have missed out.
It's kind of like when a squad is named and you talk about the players who didn't make it in the press conference, and that's where the focus is today, because Vera Powell said this was yesterday the worst day of her career, having to go around and tell the players who didn't make it, and she clearly agonised over this decision. She tried to use as much sports science as she could in terms of making the decision, in terms of looking at players' fitness levels, in terms of looking at their stats. And then having to make those big calls. And some of the calls, I suppose, were easier than others. When you think Aoife Mannion was in a knee brace until Monday, and she was hoping against hope that she could make it, but really it was a bridge too far, I suppose, for the Manchester United player, and so she was ruled out. Megan Campbell, you know, she missed the USA trip, she missed Liverpool's last six games. And even though, you know, you would hope against hope that she could have made it, it would have been something of a miracle. And we're missing her and her long throw. And that gave an opportunity for Izzy Atkinson. It was incredible, really, that she wasn't even in the original 31. But now she's in, and Claire O'Riordan is in. Claire O'Riordan scoring her first goal for Ireland against Zambia last week. And now she's on the plane to Australia. Leanne Kiernan was another one. She hadn't played for such a long time. She was injured for most of the season. I think she had a half an hour for Liverpool. She had 45 minutes against Zambia. She had the ball in the net once, but it was adjudged to be offside, and they felt, looking at her stats again, that you know, her explosive runs, the distance between them was getting longer and longer, so that's why that decision was made. But you know, I felt very sorry for her, I have to say. Vera Powell then said that the player that she was the hardest decision to make was Jamie Finn. Remember, Jamie played in Sweden in that very important draw that we got against Sweden. Started in Glasgow the night that we beat Scotland away from home to clinch her place in the world without having to go through any playoffs. So Jamie, at least as something of a consolation, has been added to the extra players, if you like. There's 23 in the squad plus three travelling reserves, and those three are goalkeeper Sophie Whitehouse. I'd love to hear Lisa's take on this, because I don't think we need a fourth goalkeeper, but William Van Eed seems to think we do, the goalkeeping coach, and Vera's going along with him, and Harriet Scott and Jamie Finn. So they'll travel down to Australia. They'll be able to train fully with the squad until the day before the first game, and they will be able to replace a player if in the eyes of the FIFA medical team that a player gets injured. So we don't really want that to happen either. But yeah, I mean, all the squad, it's not just Vera, seem to be thinking of those who were left behind, the other ones who haven't even got the consolation of getting on the plane as a reserve. Saoirse Noonan, Tara O'Hanlon, who's, I think, a terrific talent. Erin McLaughlin, that you'd have to say the same, and Hayley Nolan. But 18-year-old Abby Larkin, I mean, you know, what a journey for her. And what's this going to do for her and her career? Because I'm sure she's going to have a big career in the game. So at one level, you have 34-year-old Áine O'Gorman making it, and at the other, 18-year-old Abby Larkin. And then we have, you know, the FAI Player of the Year, Courtney Brosnan, the goalkeeper, and then our star, Katie McCabe, the captain, Denise O'Sullivan. Sinead Farrelly, she's only played an hour for Ireland. A lot expected of the US-born player. And hopefully her fitness will be good. She was out of the game for about 8 years. She was central, of course, to those whistleblower allegations of misconduct in the game in America. So, I mean, what an interesting case, but what a super player she is. But yeah, going forward now, the hard work of whittling down the squad has been made. So we've got 23 plus 3. And hopefully now they can settle on their training schedule and get everything right before the game against France, the farewell game, if you like, and then travel to Australia and let the games begin.
Absolutely. Well, we bring Lisa Fallon into the conversation. I suppose before I pick your brain on that question Tony mentioned about the four goalkeepers, I suppose, what's your overall reaction to the squad named?
I think overall it's a very strong squad, and I think it's a great testimony to where we are now and where the Republic of Ireland is in terms of the depth of the squad, that we're talking about people who really missed out and that were genuine contenders to travel and be part of the squad. And, you know, the fact that there's 23 strong players in the panel, I think is a real sign of how progressive things have been for this particular squad and the depth that is now there. And even when you go into the three players that are, you know, not in the squad but travelling, Sophie Whitehouse, Jamie Finn and Harriet Scott, I do feel, as Tony said there, for the players that didn't travel, I think, you know, when you're a player that isn't travelling and you've got an injury, at least you can have some sort of a mental rationale for that. You've a reason for it. It's tangible. It's an injury. You know, it's, I think when you're injured, it's almost easier to accept than it might be if you're fully fit and you're able and you don't quite make the cut. So for that reason, I really feel for Hayley Nolan this evening, because Hayley hasn't been, you know, one of the frontline players, as in, you know, a regular starter, but she's been very consistently in all of the squads and always there. And, you know, a key player for Vera in terms of the opposite 11 that plays against the 11 to prepare them for the games. And Hayley has been in pretty much an ever-present over the last couple of years. So I genuinely feel for her today, the fact that she's not even in the three that are travelling, albeit not in the squad, but travelling with the possibility of getting there in case of any injuries. So I really feel for her, and of course all the other girls. But like I said, I think it's easier to rationalise it in your head when, if you have an injury, that's the reason. Whereas if you're fully fit, I think it's more difficult for those players to rationalise it, but also to, you know, to take it on board. It's a tough day for all of them.
Absolutely. Well, let's rationalise then the decision to bring four goalkeepers, because I know Vera Powell has said in her media day today, the rules and regulations are that you have to have three goalkeepers on the team sheet. So if there's a goalkeeper in match day minus one that gets injured, we will not have three goalkeepers on the team sheet. Now, I think I'm right in saying Niall Quinn might have been a selected goalkeeper in the 90s. Like, I mean, is this not, Lisa, just, you know, we talk about Hayley Nolan, the other players that missed out on even being part of the extra players. Like, is it a bit of a waste bringing an extra goalkeeper? Because, like, Courtney Brosnan's going to be, well, we expect her to play every game. She's got a contract extension and everything now as well. She's nailed on Ireland number one. And the probability of a goalkeeper, of all three goalkeepers getting injured, is very low.
Yeah, I would think it's very, very low. The only rationale I can think behind it really is maybe it's more to do with the way they train, that they, if one is injured, that they'll always have three available for training. That's the only rationale I can think of for it, because, you know, you'd be unlucky to lose one goalkeeper, you'd be really unlucky to lose two, I mean, it's practically unheard of to lose three. So I think the rationale behind that is probably more to do with how they train and the goalkeeping training regime. Because if you look back over the squads, they've always seemed to have four in for the training squads, regardless of whether or not, you know, when the big squad is called up and she narrows it down, generally they've always had four, and that does tend to be a pattern. So my only thinking behind that is that it's for that training reason, to facilitate their training.
I think it's interesting at this point, though, to point out that Veerapow and other associations, not just the Republic of Ireland, the Netherlands, Germany, they were asking FIFA to have, similar to the men's, a 26-player squad. And FIFA turned them down and said it was only going to be a 23-player squad. And when you consider the amount of injuries, in particular to the women's game, and if you want to look at equality, they've increased the size of squads for the men's game to 26. And so if it were 26, I could see and understand better the rationale of the extra goalkeeper. And I do believe that Jan-William Van Eed, the goalkeeping coach, was very strong on this, and Vera backs him up. And she says she was one of the first in women's football to get a specialised goalkeeping coach into the squad. But, you know, FIFA is awash with money, you'd have to say. That's something we've seen in the past. They have increased the prize money to the FIFA Women's World Cup. In 2019, they gave $50 million. And now it's up to $152 million. So that's going in the right direction. And they do pay for the players as well. There's a financial element to Veerapow's decisions here when you think about it. Each player in the Republic of Ireland squad will now directly get paid approximately €28,000, which is important when you consider some of the players are on very, very small remuneration. €28,000 coming directly from FIFA. The FAI will get €1.4 million for just being in the group stages, and we all hope, of course, that Ireland advance out of the group stages, and that's more money for the FAI, and built into that as well, more money for the players. So there's a financial element to this as well. There's a tactical element too. Megan Campbell, as you were saying, Lisa, probably has accepted her fate. She gave up her lodgings. I'm here over in Belfield still. She gave up her lodgings to Izzy Atkinson this week, probably knowing she wasn't going to make it. But a knock-on effect of Megan Campbell not making it is we're missing the long throw, certainly, but it also means, and I asked Fear about this, that Katie McCabe will almost certainly now slot in at the left wing-back position for that opening game against Australia. And some would say, you know, Katie is much more potent further up the field. That's where she scored against Sweden, for example. So, you know, there's consequences to every decision, tactical, technical, and indeed even financially.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I think that the fact that Chloe Mustaki is in the squad, Chloe Mustaki can play that left wing back position. It's a position she has played for Ireland. So I don't think the fact that Megan Campbell is absent is nailed on that Katie will play as deep. You know, she can still play Chloe Mustaki there and keep Katie higher up. So I think it'll be really interesting. But I think what she does have in the squad, and if you look at it, Tony, and you'll recognise this as well, is that, you know, there's a number of players in that squad who can play in different positions, so that players can slot in if somebody else is out, and then she can fill in different positions. So I do think there's an element of, you know, players there who have got a couple of different dimensions to them. But I agree with you on the Jamie Finn one, because, you know, Jamie, as you say, has been a mainstay in the tournament, but Jamie was also a really standout player in the friendly, the 3-2 victory over Australia, in that friendly international in Dublin. She played the full 90 minutes and she really was exceptional that day. And then when they played against Denmark, another World Cup type opposition standard, up against a player like Pernilla Harder, she played the full game that day and she was player of the match, largely down to how well she screened the ball from going into Pernilla Harder. So I think the Jamie Finn one is particularly tough.
I think you're right there,
on
Lisa,
her.
Because speaking to Vera, she did say that was her hardest decisions.
Yeah.
Not Leanne Kiernan, not Aoife Mannion, not Megan Campbell. Jamie Finn was definitely her most difficult decision, and at least she is in the reserves. But I also feel desperately sorry for Tara O'Hanlon. She played twice in America, and the logic there was because she's a natural left footer. If there was any, God forbid, any issue with Katie McCabe, that she could slot in. So I take your point about players being versatile enough. But one of the more versatile ones is Jamie Finn.
Yeah, for sure. But again, like, I think, you know, when you're making those decisions, you know, as a coach, you go to every resource to try to balance out the decisions. And that's sometimes where the data can be a bit more objective, because you can have the heart rule the head, you know. So like you say, decisions around players that are not meeting certain criteria within the data. So, you know, for somebody, a player like Leanne, who has an explosive action. So an explosive action is where you make a sprint, or you have to make a hard, fast acceleration. And then in order to be match fit, you need to be able to do as many explosive actions as possible with as short a recovery time between them. So you might only need 30 seconds between one explosive action and to be able to go again and then again and then again. But if your gap starts to get bigger and bigger, then the problem is that you're not recovering quick enough to stay at the intensity of the match. Now, that will often happen. You'll see that happen with players generally from around the 70-minute mark on, fully fit players. And that's sometimes why players are taken off when the sports scientists see that drop-off is starting to happen. But obviously, you know, as Vera explained, that was happening. They could see that happening with Leanne in the first half of the game, which does say, you know, and then you know where you are in relation to your fitness and how much time you probably are able to play. So you'll see sometimes managers go, no, that they have 90 or they have 60 minutes in them. That's why, that's where that data type, that data comes from, and how it helps you to prevent players from becoming injured again. And I think that injury, that piece again of protecting the player is also important, that, you know, you really want to bring them, you want to give them the chance, but at the same time, you don't want to injure them again. So they're tough decisions, but, you know, that's where the sports science element really can help to make subjective decisions more objective, and that you can be really confident that you've made the correct decision. It may not feel right for the player, but it could be the correct decision for, you know, in terms of what you can expend during the game and also the risk of future injury.
Absolutely. I want to thank Tony O'Donoghue for joining us. Lisa, you're going to stick around because I want to get your reaction to Vera Powell, who was speaking earlier. We can hear from Vera now.
Yeah, it's been really, really hard. Really hard, but we've done everything that we could that was in our capacity to have a fair, objective outcome.
Very difficult for the players who are on the receiving end of bad news, though. How did they take it?
Very professional. I'm so proud of them. They have been taking it. They were devastated, of course. But, you know, if it would become a fight, it's easier to take it. And when they're so professional but the pain is coming out, it's even harder, isn't it? I'm so proud of them.
I imagine there were many sleepless nights, lots of conversations, lots of analysis, I'm sure. You've been probably poring over all of this since qualification in Glasgow several months ago. Are you happy overall with the shape and balance that you selected in terms of that 23 that will travel?
Yeah, we're fully behind it. It's an absolute balanced squad. It's a very good selection. We're fully behind it. There's no doubt. Although till the last moment we've been discussing, because the players deserve that, and every moment when somebody brought something in, we revamped it again and we came back so that every single player had every openness to make it or not make it. Monday night it was 1 a.m. that I said, guys, let's go to sleep now, because at unconscious level a lot happens when you're sleeping. With all the discussions that we've had, it settles. 8 a.m. we're here again. So 8 a.m. on the Tuesday morning we were there, and then it had to be confirmed. Of course we had made the squad. I said, after the last training, we again are looking at the video of this training. We're again looking at the performance. And then we confirm if what we've said, what we've now have, is that is the strongest. And that is what we have to do. That is our duty to choose those players. And that's what happened.
That was Vera Pau chatting to RT Sports, Adrian Eames. Lisa, our final question, I suppose, before we wrap up our chat. Vera mentioned kind of the balance and everything there, and I know you've kind of got into it in detail, and obviously Vera's made some very methodical decisions on how she's gone about selecting her squad. Overall, does this squad have the right balance, and is the methodology there, I suppose, even to make a big, proper impact at this World Cup?
I believe so. I think, you know, we've a very strong squad, and you know, there's some real quality players in there and players who offer different things. Like, even if you look at the forward players, you know, they all offer something completely different in terms of how they play, the way Kira Karusha plays, the way Amber Barrett plays, you know, the way Abby Larkin plays. Those three players alone offer you something completely different. So, and it's the same in midfield. You've got your tenacious midfielders who sit in, break up play, you know, do the interceptions, do the dirty work. And then we've got the more creative ones who can get on the ball, play it forward, or even carry it forward. So there is, like I say, that versatility is there in the squad. And look, at the end of the day, Vera wants to win matches, and her management team. So they've picked the squad that they believe can help them to win the matches over there and get the results to help Ireland to get out of the group. So, you know, there's tough opposition ahead, but I think, you know, once the dust settles now, you know, I think it's probably wise for Vera to make these decisions this week and allow the emotions to settle, and for the girls that aren't there to you know, get away and maybe get away on a break and clear their heads. And then the girls that are there, they can start to focus on the job in hand and really start to drill down now into the detail of the roles and responsibilities, play the France game and then travel across and be all guns, you know, be ready to go immediately for that massive game, which will be in front of 83,500 people against the host nation. I mean, it's incredible. What an opportunity to go and test yourself against best players in the world. And that's the opportunity that the players have now. So I think it's a very exciting squad. I think it's, you know, there is good balance in the team. There's a lot of experience. There's youth. And there's versatility amongst the players that, like I said earlier, they have that capacity to play in different positions if it's needed. So, you know, and it's also quite settled. You know, there are a few new faces in there, but it is still quite a settled squad. So, yeah, I think it's balanced. And, you know, as Vera has said, you know, her and her backroom team have put an awful lot of thought into it, and they're certain now of their decisions. They've made those decisions, and now they have to drive on and go and face into this World Cup. And, you know, it's going to be a huge moment for women's football in this country. And, you know, we'll all get behind them and hope that they do really, really well. But it is exciting. I think there's some really incredible players in that squad that can really go and showcase just how good Irish football is on the world stage.
Absolutely. Here's hoping. Lisa Fallon, thank you very much for taking a call. Don't forget, you can listen to live coverage of that Ireland-France match next Thursday, an extended game on here on 2FM. Just to finish up, Jamie Finn, who missed out on the squad that we talked about there, has tweeted in the last 10-15 minutes that today's been a historic day for women's football in Ireland and a day of mixed emotions for me personally. People know I wear my heart in my sleeve whenever I play, and I will continue to do so going forward. Representing your country is the biggest honour anyone can have. I feel so privileged to be a part of this squad since the beginning of our World Cup campaign. Elite sport is difficult, and sometimes people face unforeseen setbacks. I will continue, as I always have, to work hard representing my country, to make my dreams a reality and inspire the next generation of girls to do the same. I'm grateful to be named as a training player and will continue to play my part as the Republic of Ireland prepare for the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. As always, the girls and the staff have my full support and commitment. So that is a ringing endorsement to her teammates as well. And we wish Vera Pau and the Irish squad all the very best. Plenty more to come on Game On, Gaelic Football Camogie and European Games updates. So stick with us here on 2FM.
Game On.
Ladies Football.
Now it is time to chat Gaelic football in the company of Nadine Doherty, as always, of a Wednesday evening. Nadine, lots to get through on the pitch because there were four cracking matches last weekend. Well, mostly cracking, mostly competitive, and the groups will be decided this weekend. However, I was going to say I want to start off by chatting about something off the pitch, but it did happen technically on the pitch, and that was before the matches, not only in senior but across intermediate and junior levels as well. In the inter-county scene, that there were scenes of protest, Nadine, where players joined together at the start and then sat down beside each other, at times interlinked both counties together for a minute before the matches. We mentioned last week about what might happen, and there were scenes of protest last weekend.
Yeah, Shane, and it was great to see. It was a huge, I suppose, act of solidarity across every pitch in the country. And also, I suppose, Shane, it's really important to note, like, we can't let this disappear. And I think the way this protest is going to go, it's almost a peaceful protest at the minute, in a sense. So keeping it visible, keeping it there in the media is excellent. Also, Shane, every single crowd made huge noise. There were standing ovations all around, a lot of cheering. So listen, it just has to keep going, and these players have to keep going with it, because it just can't go away. And I think it's great that we in the media are keeping it in the spotlight as well. And, you know, people might get sick of us talking about it, but we are going to keep talking about it until these girls get what they deserve, and that is their expenses, a charter, and so on. So yeah, it was great to see, and I think we'll be seeing it every single week for the next couple of weeks until the championship's over.
I was watching the couple of matches on TG Car, and you mentioned there, I think they cut up a few shots of the fans in between the crowd as well. You could see everyone react to it, positive, the clapping, everyone kind of just cheering along as well. Like, do you think the, well, I suppose they definitely did see it, but the people that matter most, the decision makers, might be swayed by this, or perhaps it's only the start of more things to come?
Yeah, I think it's the start of things to come. They would have taken notice, that's for sure. But I don't think they're going to change their minds, and I don't think they're going to be pushed by this by a once-off. But if it continues to happen, which it will, and then following on from that, I suppose the players, if they have to go to the next level, at some point they are going to have to stand up and really take notice and do something tangible about it. I do think it'll be slower than we would hope for, Shane, but the players just have to stay strong and keep going, and I have full faith that they will.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see if there are similar scenes this weekend, and even if their male counterparts might even partake in any solidarity protests. Let us both review and preview, I suppose. We can go through each of the groups because they are going to be decided this weekend. So starting with Group 1, Armagh 2-10, Mayo 1-11, and this weekend it is Mayo versus Laois. So let us start with Armagh versus Mayo. Amy Mackin, the hero of the hour.
Yeah, she was back. I wouldn't necessarily say back with a bang, because huge credit to Dionne Caldwell of Mayo. She picked her up, and as she has done in the past, and Caldwell was phenomenal. She had a brilliant game, but Amy Mackin is Amy Mackin. She had flashes of brilliance. She finished at 1-5, and what she does for Armagh really is she just changes the whole, I suppose, focal point of their attack, Shane. And, you know, poor and all as they can be at times and were during that match, I felt she's just always such a danger. She missed that penalty in the first half. It was an incredible save from Laura Brennan. But listen, what a player to step up with 10 seconds to go and took away the penalty in the manner that she did to give Armagh, which it must be honest, like, not a deserved victory. But we saw this from them before, you know, last year in the Ulster final when they got the last minute goal against Donegal. And funny, it was Catherine Marley who set up that goal in the Ulster final last year. And she also was the catalyst for that penalty that Armagh won. She fielded an unbelievable ball in the middle of the pitch and won herself a free, and then she set it up from there. But listen, that's Armagh through. They'll be delighted. It's job done. And I suppose we spoke at length about them the week before, and we haven't really had a chance to speak about Mayo in a while. But I thought Mayo will just be looking back at this, Shane, and wondering how they lost that game. Armagh had a purple patch, I suppose, for the first 10 minutes of the second half, and then obviously the last 2 minutes where they really listen, they just put Mayo under huge pressure, but otherwise Mayo had all the possession. Mayo had so many goal chances, like I counted five or six maybe. And aside from Anna Carr pulling off one amazing save in the first half, Mayo just overplayed it too often. They just took that extra pass, so they'll be reviewing that and just sticking with them up front. I really like their movement up front, Shane. Like, they have really good lines, they find space. They have players who can take scores from distance. And then in terms of their high press on the kick out, that was really effective. And just one dynamic they've added there, Deirdre Doherty, who she would play with Charlestown, her club in Mayo, when she led them to an All-Ireland club final last year. Now, they lost it, but she was fantastic. She came into the team there at the weekend, a full forward, instead of Rachel Cairns. And she just gave them, speaking of Mackin, giving Armagh a different dynamic, Doherty just gave Mayo a different dynamic. She's real selfless. She's almost like your classic full forward of back in the day, and she's really capable of bringing players into the game. So, listen, she's a huge asset to them going forward. And they looked very good. They'll just be really, really disappointed. But I suppose they'll be looking at this Laois game at the weekend, and they would be huge favourites to progress from there into the quarterfinal.
Yeah, I was going to ask, would you be concerned for Laois considering Mayo will be so frustrated from last weekend, and now they need a win to progress like?
Yeah, well, yes and no, to be honest, because, I mean, Laois will be looking at this game themselves and thinking, if we get a result here, we're through. Mm. And Laois, they were very capable. They were very good against Armagh. They pressed Armagh really hard the whole game. I'd still put Mayo as a very heavy favourite. But Laois won't be afraid, not at all. And I think that's merited. They're showing that they can mix it with the best. They just need another year or two, I think, Shane, at senior level, just for that extra pace that you need and just getting used to the pace of the game at senior level. And while this year might not be their year, they won't fear it, but I can't see them pulling off a shock.
Okay, well, Mayo Laois throws in at 1:30 on Saturday in Castlebar. Armagh already secured top spot in Group 1, so it's up to Mayo Laois to see who will come second. In Group 2, then, we have two teams on 3 points, and that is Meath and Donegal. Following Meath's victory away to Waterford last weekend, Meath, is it fair to say a new Meath off to a winning start?
They've dusted themselves down for sure. Listen, Waterford were much improved, Shane, I felt, on their performance against Donegal. You know, they really didn't threaten against Donegal. They were quite lethargic. Whereas here, while Meath were fully deserving of the win, they were more clinical. And as you said, they were possibly back to, you know, what we're familiar with. Mm. Waterford pressed. They did play well. But the game itself, it was a game whereby, Shane, I'd say you could have counted the number of kick passes on one hand. And that really suited Meath, because Meath are just much slicker in possession through the hand. They play 13, 14 players behind the ball. So if you're a team like Waterford, who also favour through the hands out of defence and through the hands in your transition, and you're not as slick or as quick at doing that as Meath are, you're always going to be facing an uphill battle. And coincidentally, both goals, now granted they were in the last minute or two, they all both came from kick passes from both teams, so maybe they might look at that going forward. But look, Waterford, they'll be so disappointed, Shane, because, and I feel I say this about them every year, they just seem to get a difficult group, and they acquitted themselves very well. I mean, in that game, they dominated first half possession, but the weather was a massive factor in that first half. But they just weren't clinical enough. They just weren't slick enough up front. And Meath, listen, Meath, back to what we know, they put a high press in the Waterford kick out in that third quarter. They committed huge numbers going forward. They just squeezed Waterford at that time, and their key players over the last 2 years, Orla Lally was back in the team. She kicked 4 brilliant scores at important times. Vicky Wall is the best I've seen her since she returned this year. While, and I say this with quietly in a way, she was very effective. She was direct in proceedings. She was really up for the game. She was really effective. And Emma Duggan as well just had a huge influence on the game. You know, she got that last goal, but aside from that, she was really fantastic. Meath won't be, you know, they'll definitely feel that they can improve further, but that's them now in a quarter final. And this weekend, them playing Donegal, I don't think either team is going to reveal too much, to be honest. I think we'll see a few interesting lineouts, and I think both teams, they won't be showing their hand. this weekend anyway, that's for sure.
Okay, well, Meath Donegal throws in at 7:30 and Navan Waterford, of course, out now. So Meath Donegal through, and as you mentioned, there might be a bit of shadow boxing at play in that one. Group three then, Rootless Dublin. Dismantled Cavan 5:15 to 1:08. Carlo Rowe, star of the show. I suppose this result kind of sums up where each county are and the bit of a gap that there is, really.
Yeah, I think this game, as you've just put it, Shane, it probably told us more about the teams off the pitch than on the pitch. You know, we were made very aware of the difficulties Cavan have faced off the pitch, not just this year, but other years in terms of funding, expenses, getting girls home for training. You know, it was really tangible there, the gap at the weekend. To be honest, you know, the game was over by half time and I tuned out. It was mindless enough at that point. Dublin will be happy. Listen, they were ruthless. If Cavan are to get through, they'd need a miracle result against Kerry this weekend. I think they need to win by more than 20 points, which is highly unlikely. But, you know, with Cavan, there is a solid base there, Shane, and there is so much room for progression. And at underage level, they have fantastic footballers coming back. They dominated the schools this year. They were in two of four finals, and I think they won one of them. So the future is bright for Cavan if they get the support they need. And that's why this charter is so, so important for teams like Cavan. And you'd hope that they get what they need in it very, very soon.
Well, it's heartening to hear you say that, I suppose, that the future is bright for Cavan if they do get those supports, because, yeah, we do want that competitiveness across the board as well, similar fashion to Leash and Group 1 as well. So if Cavan can pull off a miracle, we will know on Saturday afternoon. Kerry Cavan throws in at 12:30 in Austin Stack. Finally, in Group 4, Nadine Galway, home and hosed, 2 wins from 2. They defeated Tipperary 4:10 to 3:04, and it's going to be up to Cork and Tip to see who will progress from Group 4. How impressive were Galway?
I probably enjoyed watching them more last week, but that was, I suppose, this week it was true, no fault of their own. You know, Tip set up quite defensively, but Tip are a physical team and they bring physicality. You know, Emma Marcy in midfield, she's an excellent footballer, and she, you know, she played really, really well. And Tip, they defended in huge numbers, so for Galway to score 4:10 against that defensive setup was very impressive in itself. Two of their goals were attempts at points, Shane, and I suppose Tip will be disappointed with that, but you know, overall Galway still deserved that 9-point win. Galway still compact in defence, they were very clever and we knew they would be. They had bodies in front of Ashley Maloney. How she still managed to score 2 goals from fisted efforts, I'm not quite sure, but only she could do that. But overall Galway will be very happy with how they manage Maloney. You know, she is one of those top players in the game that we speak about week in, week out, and they did really well to limit her. They didn't kick the ball as much, Galway, but they were still very effective, Shane, and they'll be happy. You know, that's a huge psychological boost for them, I think. 2 wins from 2, and they'll be very confident, and rightly so, going into the quarterfinal. You know, I've been their biggest critic at times because I suppose I expect so much of them, and they are gradually going upwards and upwards week on week, and they seem to have sorted out, I suppose, not their difficulties up front, but just that bit of flow up front, and they've put up 2 big scores 2 weeks in a row, and they're going very, very well.
Absolutely. I think only Dublin have a greater points difference than them in terms of scoring as well. So 2 big scores as well, and their defence is fairly tight. Cork Tip, 2 p.m. in Clonakilty. It's make or break for both counties. Who is going to prevail?
Yeah, listen, going in form, you'd have to edge Cork, you know. While they were disappointing in that second half against Galway there 2 weeks ago, I still think they would have more than Tip. But you never know, Shane. Like, as I said, this Cork team, again, I'm probably being harsh on them week in, week out, but there's so much in them. But they just need to get that 70 minutes together to get over the line. And I think if Tip had a little bit more balance in all areas of the pitch, they would probably have more of a chance this weekend. So look, Cork really, listen, if Cork are about anything at all, Shane, they have to be winning this game, and that's it. You know, if they have any ambitions to be winning All-Ireland in the next 3 years, then they have to look at this game and nail it on Sunday.
And here's hoping for no more player crossover between the footballers and the camogie. But that's just a weekly. Yeah. Here's hoping.
But yeah.
However, okay, great stuff, Nadine. Thank you very much. Just to wrap up, Kerry Cavan, 12:30, Austin Stack Park, Cork, Tipperary, Clonakilty, 2 p.m. Was doing it chronologically, but Mayo Leash, 1:30 in Castlebar, and then Saturday evening Meath, Donegal at 7:30. Plenty on the line, and we'll know the makeup of the knockout stages after this weekend, and Nadine, no doubt we will be chatting about that next week. So thank you very much for taking the call.
Thanks, Shane. Chat soon.
Game on.
Camogie.
Now, big weekend, the Camogie Championship to look forward to. And a little bit earlier on, I caught up with Aoife Murray and we began our conversation looking forward to the much anticipated clash between Kilkenny and Tipperary.
Yeah, and you know, when you hear Kilkenny playing anybody, I suppose you immediately would go and point to Kilkenny as being maybe the favourites or the expected winner. But for me, they can't seem to hit any great rhythm. And I know, in fairness, they have been dogged with injury. And I think, if anything, it's really pointed to just how influential, I suppose, Miriam Walsh has been over the past number of years. I know from my days playing, when I would see Miriam coming in full forward, you know, she always kept you busy. And I think her influence is now being really felt. A lack of influence, obviously, is being really felt. So for me, I think looking at the weekend, it is an absolute golden opportunity for Tipperary to come out on top and go get into that pot for the semi-final. I think that they're in such a good upward trajectory with regard to how they're playing. I think it's going to be a real tricky one for Kilkenny, so I'm really looking forward to it. It's a hard one to call, but I certainly will be kind of pushing towards a Tipperary victory.
If you just briefly touched on Dublin Wexford there, but Dublin will have to be less porous, I suppose, in their defence if they are going to get a win. Like, how do you see it go? Will they be able to get their act together in time?
It's a hard one to call, because in fairness, when they do tighten up at the back, like, they do have the forwards that can hurt you, and I think that's the hardest thing at the moment is twofold. It's when that ball goes down defensively, they're showing a huge amount of weaknesses. But when they do play that ball and they play it nicely up, in fairness to two Ashlings, I think they can hurt you. And in fairness, Wexford have been just slightly less porous than Dublin. So I think certainly whichever team, and I think for Wexford and Dublin, it is whoever is a little bit meaner in defence will be the ones that will come out of it. But I think here it's down to a couple of points, and it could go either way. As I said, whoever is going to be a little bit meaner and a bit more aggressive there defensively will come out on top.
Yeah, Dublin conceding 5.33, Wexford conceding 4.32 so far in their two matches. So yeah, certainly agree on that front. Dublin Wexford throws in at 6 o'clock as well. Same time as Tip Kilkenny, Dublin Wexford is in Parnell Park. So that will decide Group 2. If we are to move on to Group 1, where Galway currently lead the way, 2 wins from 2 and 6 points. Cork and Clare both have 3 points, and Down are 2 defeats from 2 matches. So this weekend it is Clare, Cork and Down, Galway. So Galway in 6 points, I suppose, starting with Clare and your own Cork, Aoife. A lot on the line there.
Yeah, and I think, look, they've got themselves into a really tricky position this weekend. And even looking, you know, you know some score differences there for the Wexford, the Wexford and Dublin match. Here, there isn't a huge amount difference with regard to offensively how they've actually performed. However, I suppose Cork have got that couple of more goals, and I think for me, in the last day for Cork, when they play that ball into Mackie and Amy O'Connor, that nice one bounce pass to them, they showed that they could hurt any defence. I think probably the ball that we played in previously, especially in the second half against Dublin, this long ball in where Galway had a player back, was a small bit senseless. So I think if Cork can get that ball correctly up, then they'll have a great shot. But if you are Clare or Cork, who's the more pressure on? The most pressure is on Cork this weekend. So Clare will have that slight advantage of everybody expecting a big performance for Cork and expecting Cork to be there certainly for the quarters. So I do think they've got themselves into quite a tricky position. Obviously, the geoclash has not helped, I'd imagine, in the preparation. I hope the players themselves have now been sheltered completely from from the absolute first that has been that dual clash, and I just hope both management teams have sorted that out in the background in regard to the player welfare and managing the players, I suppose, experience this weekend in a positive way. I hope it hasn't affected them. There's enough pressure on them, so hopefully, look, obviously from a Cork perspective, I do obviously hope they go out and they put in a really good performance, but it's going to be a tricky one, because if Clare do perform, they will make every team, or they will put every team under pressure. So it's going to be a real interesting one at how that one goes.
Galway are on the road, Park Edgler, 3 p.m. against Down. They had two good wins, each by a goal against Cork and Clare. You'd expect Galway to finish the group with 3 from 3.
Yeah, I think, look, it's not that's not a disrespect to Down, but you would expect Galway to do that. However, I think they did struggle against Cork and Clare, but as any good champions show, they find a way to win, and they stay in there right to the very, very end of those games and are always able to turn it around. Down, on the other hand, I thought they put up a huge performance against Cork for probably 45 minutes, had them under serious pressure. I think probably that little bit of fitness just got them in the end, because they had to try so hard, and particularly that Down and Cork game. I think if there was one player that you would pay at any gate to go in and see, was Malin, and especially how she performed. I think Galway will be very much keeping two players very busy on her, so you would be hoping maybe one or two other Down forwards will be able to step up. I think they'll put Galway under pressure for maybe those 40 plus minutes, but Galway will Galway to kind of, you know, go into third gear, fourth gear in those last 10-15 minutes.
Finally, in group three then, so Waterford, Antrim, both on 6 points. Happy days for those two counties. Limerick and Offaly, 2 defeats from 2 matches. So it all comes down at 4:30, Waterford versus Antrim, to see who's going to top group three.
Yeah, it's you know, for group three on Saturday, it'll be who tops it and who bottoms it, really, who will be in that relegation playoff. You know, and for me, Offaly, Limerick, they have struggled throughout the league. In fairness, you know, there's been one or two purple patches or good patches within some of the championship games. However, I think, you know, there's going to be such pressure on both of these sides to try and not be that team at the bottom of the table. And I hope it doesn't affect them in the sense of it being an arm wrestle or a tough enough game to watch and enjoy. I really hope both teams do go for it. But, you know, for me, I would say Limerick are slightly favourites for it. But either way, it is a really hard one to call. And then for me, Waterford Antrim, that should be a really good, entertaining game. It's a hard one to call as well, which is great, because for years in finishing, we've been talking about championship, and we don't nearly always only talk about the top three teams or the perceived top three teams in Cork, Galway and Kilkenny. I think the way that this championship has been structured, the teams like the Waterford, the Antrims, Offaly, Limericks, they're getting a lot more airtime. So for me, I think how this last day of the championship is being played in the sense of the round robin league games, I think it's a great positive for Camogie, maybe pointing in that we are slightly each year on year progressing to more competitive, especially the likes of Tipperary. If Tipperary can come out and top that group, I think that will really throw the cat amongst the pigeons, and hopefully it will be a very entertaining weekend.
Game on.
Camogie. Certainly hoping for an entertaining weekend of Camogie. Unfortunately, we have ran out of time, so we won't be able to cross live to Siobhan Madigan or hear from Kelly Harrington, but there is full comprehensive reporting on the RT Sport website of today at the European Games. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, Michaela Walsh made it a trio of Ireland boxers to have qualified for the 2024 Paris Olympics, joining Kelly Harrington and Dean Clancy following wins at the European Games today. So very well done to them. Just very briefly elsewhere, triathlon, both James Edgar and Luke McConnell contested the men's elite race this morning, finishing 41st and 47th respectively, and diver Claire Crine placed 22nd in the preliminaries of the 1 metre springboard today, and unfortunately didn't advance to the final. And in fencing, the Ireland men's sabre team finished 14th overall, and there was a disappointment for Amy Broadhurst, Jenny Lahan and Dana Murhouse in their boxing bouts, but more positivity there with Walsh, Harrington and Clancy. As I mentioned, the RT Sport website has a full roundup of today's action at the European Games if you're looking for that. Shit, eh? Beda Da Silva is up next. A big thank you to John Farrell, who produced this evening's show. Laura Lee Davis was our BCO, and a big thank you to you for listening. Marie will be back tomorrow, so from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.